Welcome to This Old, New Business Podcast, featuring sales and marketing experts sharing how businesses are taking old practices for building profits and making them new again by adapting to a digital, social, and global environment. And now, here's your host, Jeff Corhan.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 3 of This Old, New Business Podcast. I am your host, Jeff Corhan, and today I'm thrilled to have sales expert Jill Conrath as our guest. If you don't know Jill, she is widely recognized as one of the top sales experts on the planet. And she got there in part by recognizing that sellers are often the key differentiators in the buying process, especially if they learn how to be quick learners. So we'll discuss that today, as well as how to meet the new expectations of your customers by adapting to this new digital, social, and global environment that always seems to be changing. I'm ready to get started if you are, so let's introduce Jill. Jill is the best-selling author of Snap Selling, Selling to Big Companies, and the recently released Agile Selling that we'll talk about today. Jill's expertise has been featured by ABC News, Fortune, Forbes, The New York Times, among others. She's full of great advice and fresh strategies on winning new customers in today's evolving sales environment. Welcome to the show, Jill.
Thanks, Jeff, for having me. I'm glad to be here today.
Yeah, so we've gotten to know each other a little bit at a recent marketing conference, and then our paths keep crossing, so here we are again. I'm excited to talk about your perspectives, which I think are especially relevant to adapting to this world that we find ourselves in, whether we're talking about sales and marketing, and maybe we can even get into that, because I think the two are kind of one and the same. But before we do that, why don't you give us a little bit of background on kind of where you came from and what brought you to be doing what you are doing today?
Sure. I actually started my sales career at Xerox, and I didn't start selling because I wanted to learn how to sell. I had no desire to be a salesperson, but I did want to start my own company. And I went to the Service Corps of Retired Executives and with a business plan. And they said, hey, this is really a good idea. And then they looked at me and the other two people I was working with, and they said, now, which one of you is going to be the salesperson? And I looked at that gentleman very accusingly and said, I thought you said this was a good idea. And he said, it is, Jill, but somebody has to sell it. So I was the one who probably hated my job the most. And so I said, okay, I'll learn how to sell, but I'm only going to do it for 1 year because I do not like selling. And that was many years ago. So that's kind of how I started. I got myself hired by Xerox Corporation, stayed there for about 5 years, moved from cold calling on the streets of Minneapolis, St. Paul to calling on major accounts, and then moved into technology sales. And then finally moved into selling services before I launched my own company, where I specialized in the gap between marketing and sales and closing that gap, especially on new product launches.
Oh, excellent. Well, that's interesting. We'll have to talk about that today, because I think that gap is getting narrower and narrower, if it even exists at all. But I like your journey, because that is exactly where I started, was with a major oil company in a sales position. And I didn't really necessarily want to be in sales, but that was basically what was available.
Yeah.
And there was literally, there was no training whatsoever. So they looked at me and they said, you've got the MBA, so, you know, let's go. And I literally was terrified. I can still remember looking at that telephone. But as I'm reading your book, I'm seeing things in there that, you know, what was I charged with? To sell. And I didn't have a clue as to how I was supposed to accomplish that. But as you talk about building relationships and solving problems, these are ways to actually accomplish that objective that we're charged with. So let's talk a little bit about that and really, well, let's start with what you mentioned, this idea of, you know, what's the difference between sales and marketing? What's the gap? Is there a gap? And what's that all about?
Well, I think there is a gap, and there always has been a gap, because their charters are very different. But if you take a look at, and specifically, I said I worked on new product launches, because I believe that that's a real pivotal time for organizations. A lot of hope and success for the future is riding on how well the new product or service is introduced into the marketplace. And marketing puts together stuff to tout the best features and capabilities of the new system or the processes and methodologies. And that kind of stuff might be nice, but if you're in sales, it is not sufficient in order to be effective. And so because I worked in that area, I started out working with sales, but soon I found myself having to work with marketers to help them clearly understand what salespeople needed early in the sales process to capture a prospect's attention, to understand their customers in more depth so that they could have intelligent conversations with them, and how to move them toward the point where they might be interested in the benefits of the product or service. And so I really was spending many years doing that, and then working with the salespeople on after they had the product launch and said, here's everything you need to know about it. It was my turn to take over. And I said, okay, now that you know it, let's talk about how to sell it.
Right. Well, I would totally agree with that, because actually in my position, I was, I had both responsibilities to be marketing. We had no marketing materials whatsoever,
right,
and to sell it. And so this was, again, old school. This is the 80s. So marketing was, well, here's how I'm going to tell you about all the stuff we do.
Yep.
And then sales was, well, now I'm actually going to get to know you and your needs,
yeah,
and we'll try to solve some problems here.
Right. You know, some of the gaps are because marketing and sales are really speaking a different language. And I saw a ton of finger pointing at launch time. I saw salespeople, you know, listening to, here's what we're selling, you know, here's our new stuff, and run out all excited to their customers and say, oh, look at this new blankety blank that we have. It's really exciting. It does this. And they repeated everything that marketing had told them. But the natural human reaction to having that force come at you, that excited force of a salesperson who really wants to sell you something, only creates resistance. And that, I mean, that's truly what happens when somebody wants to sell you and you can feel it. And so prospects would either say one of three things. They'd say, how much is it? And they'd ask that question way too soon before you had a chance to justify the value. And then whatever you said was too much or wasn't in the budget. The second thing that they'd say was, can it do X or can you do X? And if the answer was no, they'd go, oh, well, if you can't, we just can't go ahead. But it was almost like it was something they'd say to rule you out. And then the final thing, which really drove me nuttiest, was when people would say, oh, that's really neat, Jill, but yeah, I bet you'll sell a lot of them.
Yeah.
That's really neat. I bet you'll sell a lot of them. But what they didn't say was, but not here.
Right, right. But
yeah,
you knew.
Oh, I did. But you know, the truth of the matter is that's what sales got, because they repeated the feature advantage benefit, you know, spiel of marketing, and they'd hit these rejections. And so they would come back and say to marketing, it's too high priced, it lacks these capabilities, and nobody wants it. And marketing would look at them and say, you idiots, you just can't sell value.
Right, right.
You know, so we had an inherent conflict built in, and nobody understood each other well enough to close that gap. If you can focus on the customer at the central point, and what matters to them, then everything falls into place. And so that was the missing link I discovered. And I had to immerse the marketers as well as the salespeople into the customer to understand that better. And in agile selling, I give exercise after exercise for people on how to do that. You know, it was the kind of stuff I did for years to help people, you know, jumpstart their sales and get up to speed quickly.
Right. Yeah. You've got a lot of things in there, checklists, things like that. So again, what's old is new. I mean, you know, these days we're dealing with technology, and I really didn't have a roadmap. I had to build my own. And of course, after a decade, I left the corporate world and started my own business, a landscape architecture business. And that's when I really became aware of the fact that, you know, you don't have a sales process. In fact, nobody in the industry, in my opinion, really had a good one, namely because we were all doing it differently. But I eventually, over a period of time, developed one. So let's talk about that. How does one go about developing that sales process or selling process, you may call it?
Yeah, well, I really think it all starts with the customer. I mean, really, truly understanding the customer. What are their issues, challenges, needs? What's their current situation? And then what would make them want to switch? And how would they behave along each step of the journey? So you have all these people out there right now who are living in less than optimal environments. They've made some decision to do some things a certain way years ago. And the whole, they've, you know, they're, it's not perfect, but they've created all these wonderful workarounds. And so if we understand this kind of stuff, we can say, well, what do we need to do to, you know, here's this person who's unaware that there are better ways. And if we come at them saying, oh, we got this new exciting thing, they'll just go, uh-uh, everything's fine here. And so you have to find a way to, you know, to help people understand what it takes to educate the buyer on the fact that other companies are doing things different and achieving some significant results. And then you have to find a way to reach the buyer with this kind of information. And it can't be just, putting it all in the back of a salesperson. I truly believe that a company has to get a website that is information rich, that supports the buying cycle, wherever they're at in the buying cycle. Have they decided if they want to, have they decided if they're looking at something seriously? Have they committed to making a change? And if so, how do they make the decision? So we really have to think at the base, here's the customer, how can we serve them best at each stage of the buying cycle, even when they're not looking, but could be doing things a whole lot better if they knew there was options.
Right, right. Well, that's how I approached it. And this was, I didn't read a book or anything. I thought, well, gee, as you've pointed out, let's get to know this customer and let's figure out how they would buy if they knew what I knew.
Yeah.
That was the main thing. I thought, this is so backwards. Why are we going to people's house when all of my materials are here and my staff is here? And, design fees we had that people had resistance to. And there were so many things. So I just kind of built a process that tried to work around that. And it didn't happen overnight. In fact, it took years, but over a period of time. And I especially love your story about your early days of reading the script that you were taught to read word by word, Mr. Prospect.
Mm-hmm.
We've all had those experiences where, you end the meeting and you say, that was an absolute disaster, Jeff. I mean, mine in particular was one where I started bringing people to the office, and I don't know the circumstances exactly, but basically said, Jeff, if you're going to bring people to the office, here's an idea. Have something useful to show them.
Well, duh. Isn't that brilliant, Jeff?
And,
but isn't it amazing that we think that selling is about pitching and telling everybody, but you're just saying have something useful, helpful
right,
to show them. That's really what selling is about.
Well, it totally is. And I'll tell you, that stung. I can't tell you how bad that hurt, but I said, this will never happen again. We will have more than enough useful information for them. And we did. And that really is what one of those ways that our process evolved was, by learning from our mistakes.
Right. And, let me just put an emphasis on that. A lot of people, what I see happening is a lot of people respond to failure in different ways. And many people in the small, medium business community, size business community will hit a glitch like that and they'll just go, geez, I'm just not cut out for sales. That'll be their natural reaction. I'm not a sales kind of person. Or the other reaction I see is, well, we didn't have a chance. They only make their decision based on price or they're really stupid. They just don't get it, the value. And so there's a deflection of the responsibility of the salesperson. And the question that should always be asked is, if we had a failure, what is our role in the failure? And how can we learn from it? And the truth of the matter is, I hate failing personally. I hate it with a passion. And so for my own sanity, I had to redefine failure as a valuable learning experience. And that is one of the key messages that I stress in the book, is that there is no failure. It's what you do after the failure that matters. If you turn it into a learning experience, you will get better.
Well, and you even point out, and I think this is highly significant, is that in those days, we were all taught that, the best salesperson has got the big personality and they're great communicators. And that's maybe to some extent true, but almost these days, with so much information online and just a highly educated customer, that the salesperson may, if we were to build a profile, is someone who's willing to do their homework, to prepare, to know more than that customer. And would you not say a different profile of who somebody might be looking for their sales team today versus, say, 20 or 30 years ago?
Well, yes. Because what we have is an educated buyer today who wants to spend absolutely not 1 ounce of time with somebody who doesn't bring value. And so these wonderful personalities, they may be able to get meetings and people may enjoy being with them initially, but if they don't continually bring them the customer ideas, insights, or information that helps them address business challenges or achieve their objectives, they won't be getting in the door any longer. And I think we're seeing a lot of people who grew up with that kind of mentality that, it's about the relationship, and you got to, be there for the relationship. But it's more than the relationship today. It's about being the resource.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, I mean, I think of asking questions is one example. Mm-hmm. It used to be we would ask a lot of questions, you know, leading up to the close, get a lot of yeses and so forth. But these days, it's practically, if not literally, insulting to ask questions that you should know the answer to if you've done your homework.
Yes, I'd like to put an exclamation point on what you said. I totally agree.
Well, you made a point in there, and I think it's a good one, that to learn more about that buyer, get on some of these forums. And I'd like to talk more about that because I know one of your specialties is LinkedIn. But when I looked at some of these LinkedIn forums, it is kind of aggravating to me when I see people asking a question that you can just Google. Now, granted, they're trying to strike up a conversation and build a string of comments and so forth. But I'm like, can we have some meaty questions here, please, so we can all learn something? So how do you get the most, how do you get value out of LinkedIn from the standpoint of groups and forums and things like that?
Well, personally, I have my own group, which provides value in and of itself for me as a thought leader, and I've got about 13,000 members, and I try to keep it a clean group, and I say that because so many of them are spammy and don't provide any value at all, and I have a rule in my group, which is called Fresh Sales Strategies. I have a rule that people can only post questions. They can't post articles to their website. They can't do any self-promotional type of activity. And I give them, you know, three strikes and you're out type of thing. So I write notes to everybody who tries to spam and not add value to or add to the conversation. So that's one way it helps me. It just is another way for me to touch people who are interested in the same thing I'm interested in. But the reality of it is, like for me, the forums where there are VPs of sales and marketing, it's an opportunity for me to answer some interesting questions that are posed by people who I would want to connect with. And it provides value by showcasing my expertise and also by just making a connection with somebody. I like fresh ideas. I mean, I really truly believe that so much has changed and we have to adapt. And that's really why I actually wrote Agile Selling, because of the need to grow and adapt today. And I really honestly believe that the core skill, that if we can master it, will make us profitable our entire career, is our ability to be a quick learner. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you know how to learn, then you can go into any position and do well fast. And I'm not the only one who's saying this. Corin Ferry, who is an executive search firm for leadership positions, says that their number one predictor of executive success is learning agility, the ability to quickly get up to speed on something new, you know, learn what needs to be learned and make decisions.
Well, and you give some good examples in the book, so we might want to talk about some of those cheat sheets and things of that nature. Now, I don't know what the term cheat sheet means to me. I guess I would call it a template, but tell me more about how you use those or how you recommend using them.
Well, cheat sheets, there's cheat sheets and there's checklists. I talk about both of them because partly it's about getting up to speed. A cheat sheet is writing down, like, for example, if you're going to make a phone call, and rather than trying to remember, it's an initial call to people, you know, rather than trying to remember everything in your head all the time, which gets you goofy and is likely to lead you off course, you might have a cheat sheet on some of the things you should focus on when you're talking to people who are VPs of sales in the technology sector. And it would be some very specific things about questions you could ask these people, messages you could leave them, business issues that they might be facing, what their likely status quo would be. You know, it's all condensed on a small piece of paper, not a small piece of paper, a regular size sheet of paper, and in front of you so that you don't have to remember everything all the time, because the brain is terrible at having a conversation with somebody or leaving a voicemail message when you haven't thought out what you're going to say. It's terrible. It can't do that. And under pressure, it defaults to something that makes us really sound stupid and turns us into product-pushing peddlers.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I don't recall, but you've got a photo of that in the book, and I will try to include that in the show notes because I think that is invaluable to really give somebody an anchor to get the most value out of that meeting. In fact, there were several things on there I enjoyed, but especially, and it might have been the top line, something to the effect of, you know, what are we trying to accomplish today? What's our goal for this meeting?
Well, if you don't know what your goal is for the meeting, there's no sense in having it. And a goal can't be to get to know the customer. I mean, a goal has to be that something happens as a logical next step. And we have to be clear as sellers, what is the logical next step of this, you know, of this meeting? And too often people say, my next step, yeah, I want to get a sale. I want to sell this thing. But that's ridiculous. And I'll put an exclamation mark on that and put it in capital letters and bold it. That is ridiculous to assume that you will get a sale in your first meeting. You know, we have to consider how people buy. And I don't know about you, but I don't buy anything that's worth any money after just one conversation with anybody. I have to get grounded. I have to feel comfortable with that person. I might have to check with other people in my office. I want to get opinions. I mean, there's a whole lot of decisions. So unless we know and can clearly articulate the logical next step. Now, if after meeting with Jeff, you know, we talk about things and it appears that he has some problems that I can solve, then the logical next step is for me to get together with his IT director and his VP of marketing to discuss the ramifications and implications in those areas.
Right. And you sort of give folks a guide as to what the typical buyer's journey is. And that was pretty much how we had structured our process was we thought it would take about four steps, basically, and they're not really, well, I guess they are steps. As you know, a lot of things go on between them, but having that clarity of knowing that this is a phase, I guess that's a better way to put it, and here's the next phase.
Right.
And I think your objective for that meeting, one of our objectives was always, absolutely always, to schedule the next meeting.
Because
it took a series of, somebody said, I don't know when we're getting back together with them. I mean, that person was potentially liable to be fired in our system.
Right, right. And so we have to think, the very first step that somebody makes is to agree to speak with you or have a conversation. And that's the first decision that they ever make. So then our job then becomes to figure out what does it take to get them to say that it would be worth their time, because people are so protective of their time these days. And it's about messaging and appealing to what we can do to help their business. And then the second decision they make is a decision to change from the status quo. And by the way, that is the hardest decision, because we have everything else that's going on in their organization at any one time. It's all happening, and trying to get people to move and to agree and decide if it's worthwhile, and then thinking about, oh God, then we'll have to, you know, call in vendors and we'll have to do this and that. It's really hard. So we lose more decisions to no decision than any other competitor out there. So that's why it's the biggest challenge. And then the third decision is, you know, if we do decide we're going to change, who are we going to change to? And that's where you have to differentiate yourself. And then the fourth decision is, do I want to keep growing with this company, doing more business?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, it really has to be thought out. Thinking about this, I'm thinking about the next book that I plan to work on. I didn't intend to write a book on selling, but my book that I previously wrote is basically on social marketing and content marketing. Mm-hmm. The final chapter was on selling, and as I've been in front of audiences, I've asked them if they're using social media, and 50% or so of the hands go up, and I ask them if they have a sales process written down, and guess how many hands go up?
How many?
None. It is stunning. I mean, is this what you see in your world? I'm flabbergasted by it. These are small businesses, and I know you work with larger companies, so they must have some process. But how worked out are these processes typically?
No, they're still very formulaic, even within the larger and more progressive companies. I do a lot of work with mid-market organizations, and I still see people even deciding, do they really need to be on LinkedIn? You know, is it really that valuable? And it's because they checked out LinkedIn about 5 or 6 years ago, and they put up their resume, you know, and no, they haven't gotten any business from it today. So they have no idea that LinkedIn has evolved into a powerful research tool and a connection tool, even a publishing tool, where they can be in front of their customers and showcase themselves and put their own face forward. And most people don't think about that. But if they're selling for a company, there's a company website, but there's nothing for Jill Conrath, you know, or there's nothing for Jeff Koren. There's nothing there for you.
Yeah, I think that publishing platform is on LinkedIn is phenomenal. I'll admit I need to put more work into it. I've only got one article up there. But the idea that, let's say, in the old days, we thought of your LinkedIn profile as your resume, your online digital resume. Well, if you can be publishing all these articles that tell your story, it becomes kind of a documentary, as I see it, if you're willing to put the effort into it.
Right. And I think for most people, if they could just start out by sharing links to interesting content, they would be much further ahead. Publishing your own content is pretty scary for a lot of people. I'm not sure a lot of salespeople, it's their greatest strength. But everybody could be able to read industry articles that were relevant to their buyers and post something that said, just read this new article about the trends in the trade show industry, thought you guys might enjoy it, or thought you might find it helpful.
Yeah,
and
there is
provide a link. And so there's that simple, just the updates on LinkedIn for most people is a publishing platform that they can easily use.
Right. And sharing information, what we know of as OPC, other people's content, I find it engages us with other folks in our industries. And it encourages them to share, you know, our material when we do actually publish it.
Right. It absolutely does. And most people don't think that they can do that. They feel like it's not right. But the whole point is you want to share good information. When I say good, I mean information that your prospects and customers would find helpful. And if you do that, you will be seen as a trusted resource. You will be seen as not self-serving, that, you know, that you're really trying to be helpful and make a difference to the people who you serve. And that's crucial, too.
Oh, that is so, so critical. In fact, that's something I discovered by accident. I mean, my personality was not one would have thought you would hire for if you were hiring a salesperson, but I had the job anyway, and I was told to get out there and sell. And not really knowing what to do, I thought, I'm just going to get out there and see if I can help some of these people. And that turned out to be exactly the right thing to do and couldn't be even more relevant today. So whether you're selling or your social media or your content marketing,
right,
you know, it's all about helping these days.
Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people are afraid to use LinkedIn and they aren't really sure. And again, one of the things I talk about in Agile Selling is how to learn something new. And to, you know, LinkedIn and learning how to use LinkedIn can be a real scary thing. It's like, when you look at it, you go, oh my God, there's so much to learn. And the answer is yes, but one of the first strategies of rapid learning is to break things down into digestible chunks. You don't have to learn everything at first.
Right, and you also make a point about debriefing. That is something that I've learned so much from is, we talked about failures, and you're going to fail. But
yeah.
Are you debriefing to say, okay, what worked, what didn't, now let's fix it for the next time around?
Right. And even in your debriefing, what did I do well? Because there are times you will say something or you'll ask a question and you'll get this incredible response and you'll kind of go, whoa, what just happened? And you don't know that what you asked or what you said or what you did was really good. And so we have to also watch when we do good things so that we can replicate them in future sales scenarios.
Yeah, I suppose I was selling on my own. And then when I had my own business, not all the time, but most of the time, there was more than one person on our team in that room. And so debriefing together and understanding that, oh yeah, that was my understanding too, that was yours, okay, great, is so powerful to know that, hey, we're all on the same page now.
Well, it really is, and it's amazing if you are with somebody else how you pick up some things and they pick up the some other things. It's like sometimes you go, were we in the same meeting?
Yeah, it's true. That's why when we came down to our final meeting, when it was time to close the deal, and the client knew that because the name of that meeting was called the commitment meeting, what someone would perceive and somebody else wouldn't often enabled us to at least close part of the deal, at least have some closure to say, okay, we all agree on this. It looks like you're challenged with that. Let's set that aside. We'll fix that and work on that later.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Well, I've taken up so much of your time today, but I really appreciate this. This is super valuable information. So why don't we've got a little speed around here that we've discussed. So the first one should be very easy, and that is, what is your top sales or marketing tip?
To learn how to learn, because that'll port with you anywhere you go.
Excellent. Learning. Okay. How about favorite productivity tip?
Protect yourself against distractions.
Excellent. And do you have a quote that has inspired your success?
Yep. Never say never. I heard that. Actually, I was at a a networking meeting my very first year in sales, and a guy handed me this quote, and I think it was from Robert Schuller, and I thought it was his business card, and he said, "No, it's a quotation. I think you'll find it helpful."
I like it.
In your career. Never say never. And so I never did say never. It was always, if things didn't work, it wasn't never. It was, I just haven't figured it out yet.
Exactly. There's always a way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks again, Joe, for taking the time with us. And why don't you let the listeners know how they can find you in the future?
I am at jillconrath.com, and that's K-O-N-R-A-T-H, Jill, K-O-N-R-A-T-H.com.
Okay, that's all for this episode. Thanks so much for listening. You'll find the wrap-up and the links to all of the resources that were mentioned in the show notes at thisoldnewbusiness.com. If you enjoyed the show, please go to iTunes and subscribe, and take a quick moment while you are there to write a review, because those downloads and positive reviews tell iTunes this is a show worth listening to. Another way to help us get the word out is to go to jeffcorhan.com/new. That will take you to a ready-made tweet that will link back to the show. So just give it a click and share the love. We really appreciate your attention today and look forward to you joining us again to learn what's new for business.